You are listening to the FDNY Pearl Podcast, featuring members of the New York City Fire Department. We want to share stories from the field, best practices, lessons learned, and help save lives.
Welcome to the 100th episode of the FDNY Pearl Podcast. I'm your host, Battalion Chief Brian Mulry, with my co-host, Captain Randy Lee.
Hello, everyone.
To celebrate this milestone, in studio today are the inaugural episode's guests and host, Dr. Dario Gonzalez, a medical director in the FDNY's Office of Medical Affairs, and now retired Chief of Staff, Elizabeth Cassio. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Thank you.
All right. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming down. The two of you kicked off this experiment back in, hard to believe, April of 2016. The idea being that we'd share stories from the field, operational tactics, lessons learned, and hopefully help save lives. This is back when podcasting was just getting going. We didn't know how long it was going to last. I know that much. But maybe you could talk a little about your initial thoughts when you agreed to be the host and what you remember about that first episode.
I knew what a podcast was, but there were definitely people on the staff who didn't know what a podcast was. I was very excited. I also felt like a fish out of water. It was something very new for me. I was not exposed to any sort of podcasting, radio shows, even television, right? That would be the type of experience that maybe would be an easy transition. But I did draw on my teaching experience to help me get through it. And I learned a lot from the staff here, from Kristen, and a lot from Joel Malvasio, too.
Yeah, they're vital to the success.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. How about you, Doc? Do you remember that first episode?
That's a long time ago. I thought it'd be interesting to talk to an audience of two or maybe three. I had no idea who would be even interested in listening to what I have to say, since they don't listen to me anyway. And yes, thank you. I appreciate that. And I would really appreciate the idea of actually just speaking to what we had done and what I thought had been accomplished. And I still look back on that trip. It's probably the best thing I ever did in medicine, period.
Yeah.
No matter all the stuff I've ever done, that is probably the most rewarding and the most depressing of everything we've ever done. I thought it was very interesting. I knew of TED Talks, so podcast was very new to me.
Yeah, it was new for everyone in 2016, for sure, in this department especially. But maybe we could talk a little bit more about that first episode. Dr. Gonzalez, you had just returned from Liberia, training and treating Ebola patients. So fascinating because the two of you speak about the department's response protocols to Ebola that happened in that time period and the need to prepare for something bigger. And with COVID, bigger did come in terms of patients. And we're going to play a short clip that foretells things to come just 4 years later.
I think what really led it to be successful was people just really sort of saying, we need to get this done, and we don't have 8 months, we don't have 2 years to figure out how the policies are going to work, but rather saying, this is the end point, we got to get it working, and we got to move forward. So I think that was probably the biggest thing, just getting people to sort of say, this is the real deal, we need to do something, and we need to do it now. If we get it wrong, we'll move on, and we'll correct it, and we'll modify things. But from what I heard and what I saw, we really didn't get a whole lot wrong.
I think it demonstrates that the proper planning for any large-scale event is transferable to another large-scale event. And while there may be some policies and procedures that need to be tweaked specific to, in this instance, COVID, which was a new virus compared to Ebola, there are many procedures that we were able to transfer over or translate into the COVID environment. We just couldn't use the same level of PPE that was necessary for Ebola or the same level of responders that we chose to use for Ebola for COVID. It would not have worked because we didn't have enough resources, whether they be people or PPE, to treat the COVID pandemic the way we were treating a more isolated instances of Ebola, because it never reached pandemic level for us here in New York City, Ebola.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think one of the big lessons that I think we learned and need to learn, I think you can't start all over. The world has changed. I think the advantage to what we had with Ebola, even though it was not a pandemic and it wasn't really an epidemic. It was really very, very localized and controlled, and we were very lucky. But the idea of using what we had there as a jumping off point, starting off from there, and then saying, well, let's see what we can get right. But I think the most important thing to me was we can't have the fear of failing. We will fail. We will do things that are not right. Whoever thought that people breathing at oxygen levels in the 50s was going to ever exist? It doesn't exist. In our world, that just was not a reality. And the idea of people putting on ventilators and turning them over, never. That was never done. And so, you know, a lot of it is really learning what to do. And I sort of looked at it as the way we flew blind when AIDS came in. Mm. And we made a lot of mistakes, but a lot of positive moves. And I think that was good. I think we needed to do that rather than get stuck in a place and worry about figuring out some things that's going to take us 6 months to do. And I think that's really important, especially for the next plague.
So, Dr. Gonzalez, when you came back from Liberia, there was mention in regards to communication between the rescue medics, hazmat suppression officers, and all the hospitals. And there was this cohesion of resources that kind of happened. Can you kind of elaborate more on that and kind of relate it to the COVID experience?
Yeah, I agree. I thought we would silo. What was very, very impressive was that it was everybody's job. And I think that that was really good. There was good communication. There was good policies in place, but that people were actually looking at them and coordinating, and people knew what other people were doing. So we didn't have this separation. Well, I'm do CFR, this is all I do. This is suppression is all I do. And those lines got blurred, and they got blurred very nicely, I think. And I think that we saw that in COVID. We didn't see people saying, I don't do this, I do this, that people willing to assist, people willing to show up to work. Everybody was doing what they could do.
Then Commissioner Nigro, he made it very clear and actually gave an edict that all parties were going to have to sit at the table together and work this out. And even then for Ebola, he said, we don't have the luxury of time. You cannot spend endless days, weeks, and months trying to figure this out. If we don't get it right initially, we'll learn from that lesson, we'll tweak it. I mean, that is what we do all day, every day. We learn from different scenarios that present themselves, because what we teach in a classroom, while it's transferable to the field, there will always be circumstances that come up that were not discussed in the training environment for whatever reason. Maybe they never happened before, like this novel virus called COVID or coronavirus, right? So probably the greatest lesson we ever teach our members is you must be able to adapt and overcome the circumstances that are presented to you based on not just your training, but also the experience that you've gained over the time of your tenure.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you can record an episode about a specific event, but the lessons learned there are universal later on. We're going to check out this clip where you speak about bringing in help when you need it.
If there was an outbreak in New York City, that we would need to really bring in assistance, no matter how big we are. Are other areas willing to assist to come into areas where you have plague, where you have smallpox, where you have Ebola, where you have MERS, where you have all sorts of other things that are coming down the road?
If you had told me back then in 2016 that we in New York City would need to ask for help from outside of the city limits, I would have thought, I can't picture that scenario. We are always the ones who go help, right? We are resource rich compared to other jurisdictions, and we're the ones who go all over the world to help other jurisdictions. So I could not picture the scenario where we were asking for help. The national ambulance contract would be the most profound example of this particular question. When the lockdown first happened in March of 2020, it was during that first week. We decided that because we had never experienced an emergency like this before, and it seemed every day to increase in severity exponentially from the day before, we decided that, yes, we're going to ask for resources from the National Ambulance Contract. And by the time they showed up, there's always a lead time for these resources. You don't say, I need hundreds of ambulances from all over the country, and tomorrow they're here, or even next week.
And it's one thing to get them in, and it's another level to put them to work also.
That was a huge lift.
Because it just, for me, it just triggered a memory. I remember going to the firehouse and driving past the parking lot for the Bronx Zoo. It was just lined, wall to wall with ambulances ready to go to work.
It's a huge collaborative effort on the part of the fire department, NYSEM, New York City Emergency Management, the State Department of Health EMS program. It required a lot of different branches of government to help make sure that they didn't just show up and nobody could utilize them.
I remember being working in the South Bronx as a lieutenant at the time, and when the NAC units came in, it was a very big sigh of relief from us, because attacking COVID felt like climbing a mountain, and it was just us, and our numbers were slowly going down because people were getting sick. And then when the NAC units showed up, it made it a little bit easier. It made it look like, okay, maybe we can make it to the top. But yeah, if we didn't have those NAC units, we were thinking we were gonna be in a world full of hurt, and it was just nice to be around other EMS providers who were in it with you, so you had somebody to bounce stuff off of. Because at that time, all we had was your partner, your station, you went home, or the hotel, or you came straight back, and just to have somebody else there who kind of understood what was going on was just, it was comforting. It was very comforting. All right, so at this time, I'm going to play another segment that was particularly prescient.
What advice would you share with other medical directors throughout the country who are evaluating if their own efforts for Ebola are sufficient for the potential threat?
They need to understand that these diseases, whatever it is, and there are the list of potential pandemics that sit at the CDC is probably about 100 things, from pandemic flu to Ebola to Legionnaires, that they need to have generic plans in place that deal with the containment, the transport, and the coordination with medical facilities, that they can't just wrap an ambulance in plastic and then just assume they're gonna have one limited patient. That they need to look at, what do we have to protect the workforce, and then what do we do to actually move these people? And the city, wherever they are, the locality, has to figure out what are they gonna do when 14 beds isn't enough. How are you going to manage that? And that's really a medical, logistical nightmare.
Yes, and it was. Because I traveled every hospital in the Bronx just to touch base with the ED people and make sure, you know, they understood that we were coming. And, you know, just touch base with them. And we tried to look at ways of managing and transporting patients, giving them a little bit of heads up on what they're going to do. And it was nice to go to the facilities, no matter how overwhelmed they were. As running around as they were always, you know, really working at it. I think they've learned some lessons. They need to modify some of their procedures, some of their approaches, some of the things we do and what they do. People are really working together at it. And we can't forget what we've learned and just think it's a one-on, and that's it. You know, Ebola popped up again in Congo and in other places in Africa, but the flames will put out very quickly. But there are other things that are brewing. And when they come, they're going to come. It's a very, very small world, and we think we can isolate ourselves. We can't. So we need to figure out how we're going to manage that. But lessons learned, procedures, policies, they don't need to be pulled off the shelf. They should be things that we're doing on a regular basis. And we need to look at some of the ways we can use a Javits-type place, which is basically a big tent. And in Africa, that's where we took care of people, in big tents. So we need to think differently about how we look at things. And we say it didn't work completely. Good, then let's see how we can fix it, what we can do.
I think I reacted to this quote as this, you know, foretelling of the future, partly because we don't deal with pandemics regularly. And so it almost felt as if it was predicting what was to come and what was necessary to be successful at mitigating the consequences of the COVID pandemic. In retrospect, I realized that most of what we do is transferable to other emergencies. So in this instance, it really was just like any other emergency we prepare for. It's just we're not used to preparing for biological emergencies. And so I think it stood out in a way that made it seem special or different or unusual. But I think the longer you're in this profession, the more you realize that just when you think you've seen it all, life will show you that you have not. However, what you've learned along the way can be utilized, or you can draw upon those experiences to mitigate the maybe somewhat unique consequences of this time around.
Would you ever have guessed that you'd have so much to talk about and reflect on from that first episode?
From just the first episode.
But it's true, though. Like, you know, we put a lot of thought into picking our topics. We try to find things we could learn from, have some real salient points for the whole membership. You think about it, you learn, you talk about it. It's the best way to really get some lessons learned out of it and file it away for when you need it. Doctor, we really appreciate it. You know, thanks so much for being here to mark our 100th episode, and we appreciate you taking the time to come down and share with us again.
Liz, would you like to do it one more time?
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back to talk behind the scenes about this podcast.
Perfect.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And when seconds count, the men and the women of the FDNY are there for us, to protect us and keep us safe when the unthinkable happens. No matter the challenge, no matter the danger, our firefighters and EMTs serve with honor, dedication, and bravery. New York's bravest are there for us. Let's be there for them. Your support of the FDNY Foundation ensures that the world's best fire department has the world's best training, equipment, and education. Go to FDNYFoundation.org and help New York's bravest save a life today.
For the second part of the podcast, we are joined by our very own producer, editor, Kristen Eng. We have a small staff that works on the podcast, and she's recorded and edited the majority of the episodes. Welcome, Kristen.
Hello, everyone.
Although you've edited all of our podcasts, you are a first-time guest today, so maybe you could give us a quick bio.
Like I said, I might edit myself completely out. quick bio is that I started working here during 9/11, and I had some video experience. And I wasn't doing that at the time, and I went and worked for FEMA for a while, and I was working down at the site in the trailers down there, helping out the officers, and they asked me to stay after FEMA left, and I did that until the site closed. And then because of my video experience, I transferred over to the video unit here doing training and fire safety education, and that was for quite some time. So then we started branching into podcasts and films and publications, and that's how I became involved with this.
Yeah, well, you have been involved in so many of these things over the years. I know we started Diamond Plate.
Yeah, we did Diamond Plate training.
And that was my
Well, I was doing training on tape before that, and then DVD, and then we started doing it on the website. And I miss that, the training and operations, and that's really why I like talking to you all, because we get to do the training a lot here, talk about operations.
Yeah, that's what we always like to go back to with the podcast, for sure.
Liz, Brian, you've hosted a majority of the episodes, and since your retirement, Liz, I've stepped in to host a few episodes. Can you talk about the origins of the podcast and how this podcast even came to be?
We were working on a couple of different educational-type programs, including the magazines, both WNYF and Pro EMS, and Joe Malvasio was interested in making both of these platforms a little bit more interactive and multimedia. And we were looking for ways to innovate and make it more appealing to a younger generation. So it was Joe who suggested that we start a podcast. And I went to Commissioner Nigro. At the time, I was his executive officer. I told him that we wanted to start this podcast, and he said, "What's a podcast?" And he would readily admit that today. And that was pretty much how we started. He said, "Well, if you all think it's a good idea and it's something that's going to work, I can get behind that." You know, he was interested in a lot of the technology when he came back. That was a gap for him. He came back after 12 years of being retired, and the one big change in how the department was operating was on the technology front.
Yeah, I remember those early years, and I guess my first podcast, I think, was in 17 or 18. But I was on an administrative detail down here for what ended up being 2 years. And, you know, I was just asked to sit down and do it. And we put together a script, and I forget what the topic was. I think it was safety-related. And I had always done some work with Kristen through safety for the Diamond Plate. But as it's grown, you know, as it's changed, we learn more about it. You know, we're able to see what gets listened to more. And we've really been able to fine-tune what we think is popular and most valuable for the membership. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just as simple. I can't tell you how many people have told me, well, I listen in my car on the way to work.
What Joe likes to say is that we've had WNYF since the 1940s, right? Like, so we know that the content is interesting and people like to read it, but it is a different thing to hear somebody talk about those jobs, like hear the conversations, hear them tell the stories, get to hear how they felt when they were on top of the roof getting ready to lower somebody, or in a high heat situation scrambling to look for somebody in the clutter.
Well, you're right. And it's like a lot of our learning takes place. Oh, you had a job today. What'd you have? Tell me about it.
That's right.
But what I like about the podcast, it's that, but it's also delving deeper into it, asking more specific questions and having people really explain what happened, what roadblocks they ran into. And like I selfishly have picked episodes. I'll see an article. I'm like, I haven't had one of those in forever. And that's what happens with this job. Low frequency events, they like to call them. But all of a sudden, you have to remember, yeah, and I'll just use one example. I read an article about a trench collapse that happened in our district. I wasn't working, somebody else was working, but it got me to thinking. I'm like, I was trained a little bit on trench rescue, but I haven't had one of these in so long. So we had, you know, our lead instructor come down, and we just used that as an example, and we did a podcast on it. If I was a probationary firefighter, and you could tell me there were, you know, 70 episodes that were 30 minutes each to learn about this job, I know for sure I would have listened to every single one of them. Yeah. Either way, I just think certain things are good to get on tape here.
You know, we'll do an interview here on the Pro Podcast. It'll be maybe in the Metal Day book. And sometimes we'll turn stuff into a film. We even had Kevin Shea on.
Yeah.
Retired from...
Brought him back.
We brought him back. He was from the famous Road Rescue in 1991. But we did a film on it called The Last Resort. And we've done a film on the Halligan, and we've done a film on the 23rd Street Fire, well, a faction of it. But we use part of the interview from Vincent Dunn and Chief Butler and Chief Hay talking about the 23rd Street Fire to introduce parts of the film. So everything's kind of tied together between all of these outlets that we have.
And there's nothing wrong with redundancy, especially when it comes to training, right? Sometimes when you end up in the chief's rank for a little while, it's sometimes those 30-minute clips of what somebody had, what they did, and is I think is really valuable.
I agree. I will say that when we first discussed the idea of it, it was not suggested that I be a host. I don't even remember the conversation, actually, that leads to me being one of the hosts or even hosting the first episode. I just remember thinking, I'm a fish out of water, but I'm going to have to draw on my many years of teaching experience to be able to maybe pull this off.
Yeah, you could see the correlation.
Yes.
It makes sense.
Absolutely. I think that there are lessons learned somehow, some way in all of our podcast episodes. There are lessons learned.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, aside from the EMS aspects of some of the podcasts that, you know, will touch my heart specifically because I'm EMS, there's all that stuff. All the podcasts that refer to fire operations, the stuff that I don't know. I'm not a firefighter. I don't know what you guys do, but getting a little taste of, especially the assignments that we're talking about here, they're so infrequent and high intensity and everything is on the line. And to hear how quickly you have to do X, Y, and Z and concurrently doing the similar decision making as EMS is. It's interesting, and it puts things into perspective how much we have to work together and how much we have to like be on the same page, because we're ultimately trying to do the same thing. We're trying to save life, property, and the whole nine, everything, right?
So yeah, sure. And, no, we try to work that in there for sure.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Because it's such a big part of our operations now, sure. Especially when you have multiple victims.
Well, what do each of you, I'm curious, what do each of you like about hosting and about the podcast? Liz, I know you told me that it sort of is an opportunity to have a historical record of an incident or from a person. Like, can you talk about that?
Well, if we even look at just the first episode, that was a huge event going on, Ebola, at the time, and very deadly. And we had one of our own members go across the world to treat patients, and I'm talking about Dr. Gonzalez, to be able to highlight his contribution to that effort and the experience that he was bringing back to our department, and have this podcast as the forum to do it. It's recorded forever now. So I have found to be able to highlight members like that who provide a huge contribution to the overall mission of this job. I think that having this forum to highlight members like that is probably my most favorite part. I also like that we can record historical events that do not happen frequently, like COVID or Ebola or a rope rescue that is so dangerous.
Or the 9/11 testimonials, right?
The 9/11 testimonials, right? That first person either survived both collapses, survived one of the collapses, a responder, someone who's suffered 9/11 illness. I think that all of these are examples of being able to put on record someone in particular who maybe doesn't get a medal, right? We highlight our medal winners as well, but somebody who doesn't get a medal but deserves the recognition. The podcast has allowed us to do that, or set the record straight on a historical incident. For example, one of my favorite episodes is the Tracy Allen Lee episode, where we talk about the first member in the country to contract AIDS on the job and how difficult the process was for her because she had to prove that it was a job-related injury. And it set off a whole network of activism to be able to get new rules and new laws to protect EMS members.
That was a little different, too, because we went out in the field. We did some field interviews.
Yes.
At a ceremony they had for her, the 25th anniversary.
Right. Yes, so the format was different, too.
We've done that, Brian. We've gone to Chief Jonas's house.
Yeah,
he retired.
Sat on his kitchen table.
Yeah.
Which, you know, these are powerful stories, first-person stories, to get on record.
It's interesting because I have a similar background of both of them kind of combined. So, Liz, you're an instructor forever and a day. I know you as Liz, the instructor of the academy, right? And you worked on Diamond Plate. So I was an EMS instructor for a very long time, and I worked on Diamond Plate as well. So you want to be able to teach people. You want to be able to give your membership a voice. You want them to be able to tell their story. And Diamond Plate plus education mixes together, and this is kind of what you get. You know, when we listen to the stories of some of the membership, when they're talking about whatever assignment they're on, there's all these little nuances that people don't take into account when someone's doing a job, what they're thinking, what's happening, what's going through their mind, and this gives you a chance to see that. Now, as an instructor perspective kind of thing, your newest membership will not understand that. They know I had to follow the ABCs, go through A, get all the way down to Z, but they don't think about all the little things you'll think about, all the little nuances of how to get there that may occur. And now that everyone has a voice, they can tell their story, it happens, right? Be an instructor, a little bit of Diamond Plate, boom, FDY Pro.
Yeah, and if I had to talk about why I like to do it, it's pretty simple for me. Like, I'm just continually impressed by some of our guests. We love to joke about, oh, the next generation coming on. What I see is we're in good hands, you know. And it's really good for me because when I started doing it in 2018, I'd been a chief for a little while and back up in my firehouse in the Bronx. And you get to come down and meet people from all over the job, you know, whether we're bringing in a subject matter expert like Ray McCormick or, you know, Mike Ciampo or somebody that was on a detail that ended up on a rope. And you're just hearing their story. And I've just come away continually impressed, straight across the board. And it's also been really good for me. It's helped me stay engaged, mm-hmm. You know, because you're forced when you, all right, we're going to do a podcast on this. And like, I have to brush up. it really forced me to stay engaged. And it's why I continue to do it. I do like doing it. And I do think it provides a little value.
So obviously we were kind of talking about some episodes that are important to us, but do any of us have any specific episodes that are our favorite, most memorable?
If I had my favorite episode, I couldn't narrow it down to one. So I'd pick two, but for two specific different reasons. The first one that I just loved doing, it's more recent, was that rope rescue we had in Midtown Manhattan. And, you know, it was national news. There were some young members of our department, some more senior members of our department, and they all teamed up. They explained to us what happened on the floor above. I just love that it highlighted, your number's going to be up on any day. We had the young firefighter Pogarski from Ladder 108. You know, he takes a detail up to Midtown on, was it a weekend? I feel like it was a Saturday or Sunday, I don't know. And, you know, a couple hours later, he's 200 feet in the air on a rope in a really, not just an ordinary roof rescue. They really had to use that term, think outside the box. They had to figure some stuff out. It was a really challenging one. And it's a testament to our training. You know, I remember we had one of the guys from Ladder 16, and he explained, well, you know, some of our lieutenants, they work at the rope unit, so we drill on it consistently. That part I loved about it. It all came together, and it could happen on any day. It doesn't matter where you are in the city. You graduate from Proby School, chances are they're going to call you to, you know, show you what you're made of. And they really did. And they made us all look good. National news. And then the other one that stands out to me is the one we did with Christina Moon on organ donation for completely different reasons.
And it was really soon after Billy passed away.
When you brought the topic up, I'm like, are you sure we want to do this?
She was terrific.
But it was more than that. If I'm not mistaken, the two people who received the organs, I don't think they had even met at that point. And they were here via Zoom because they were still in isolation. They couldn't be in the same room. And it was just, it was really emotional, I thought.
Liz?
So like Brian, I had to narrow it down to two. But the truth is, every time we would produce the next episode, I'd say, oh, this one's my favorite. But they can't all be your favorite, right? But I did narrow it down to two in particular. The first one was with retired firefighter Kenny Ruane, which would have been in the first year that we were recording the podcast, I think. And he was relatively newly retired. He had suffered cardiac arrest at home. He attended the Second Chance Ceremony, which we do during EMS Week every May, which is a national celebration of EMS to bring attention to EMS in all communities. That week, we also celebrate people who have survived a cardiac arrest, and they come and meet the rescuers who brought them back to life. The reason I enjoy that one so much is not just the topic of Second Chance, which, if you've never been to that ceremony, is probably one of the most moving ceremonies that we have in the department. But it was also that he was a former member, and we were able to discuss the trials and tribulations of starting the Certified First Responder Training Program and the subsequent merger, a little bit of the politics that was behind that. It was a very difficult time, but Kenny credited that program, and rightly so, with him not only being brought back to life, but suffering no neurological deficits. So for those reasons, I particularly favor that episode, and I also favor the Tracy Allen Lee episode because she really suffered after being diagnosed with HIV/AIDS, which at the time that she was a death sentence. It wasn't will I die, it was when will I die, and how bad will it get before I die. That's what AIDS was like back then. And not only did the law department controvert her workers' comp case because it was unprecedented for someone to get a communicable disease, and not only a communicable disease on the job, but a deadly one, and one that had this huge social stigma around it. So I felt like it gave us an opportunity to set the record straight on her legacy. We did in the field interviews with her husband and other people who
former
had worked
colleagues,
with her.
Yeah. And played snippets from the ceremony that they held for. It was really nice.
It was very nice.
Randy, what are your favorites?
To prepare to replace Liz, which is very difficult. You know, I went through a lot of the episodes, and the two that I kind of remember the most right now is you had one that was on simulation at the EMS Academy with Kate Frawley, the now Captain Kate Frawley. And I'm a former competition medic, right? So I always go into simulation world because that's how I train, that's how I do everything, and that's how I have these cute little gold medals at home. But yeah, I know Kate personally as well, and that episode was super cool because it was before I had gone to the EMS Academy, right? So I didn't really know too much about the simulation stuff. I've gone there for training, and then I've gone around the world doing competitions. So that was great. It was nice to hear that there was some level of representation of my little world, right? And then also there's the episode with Battalion Chief Michelle Fitzsimmons, who is my co-host on the Join FDNY podcast. So any chance that I get to hear from my friend, my co-host, I'm always going to chime in and be like, yay, and, you know, be the cheerleader for her, and hearing about her climb the ranks in the FDNY is always good. So yeah, those are my two, and I don't have any deeper meaning except for the fact that I liked hearing about it, right? And hopefully people who listen to this podcast aren't necessarily always diving in for, okay, what can I learn from this podcast? Sometimes it's just a piece where they can just hear about people and get
it's
involved,
enjoyable.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Kristen?
I feel the same way. It's hard to pick the favorites.
Yeah.
I always like the operational ones, the Medal Day highlights, but the 9/11 testimonials are always pretty meaningful. The one that we did with Monsignor Delendic with you, Liz, was so powerful to me because you knew he was sick, and we recorded it early, and he ended up passing away in November, and I think it was such a nice episode to have him captured in that way for all of time. And then the other ones are the medal winners where you talk to these people that do amazing saves. Like, I think it was Samuel Wright, Gary Huyt. They saved an unconscious person from a dump truck, or Ladder 108, who saves three people, including children, by just going back in and finding people in a cluttered situation, and you get to hear their stories from them, and it's really cool. Like, I am the managing editor now for WNYF, so, like, I know that people enjoy these stories, they could read them, but it's so much more powerful also to hear them from the first-person experience.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. There's no substitute, right? For you can hear the emotion in the voice.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm sitting there crying my eyes out when I'm editing.
That's the one you do in mine, right?
There's a lot of...
for different reasons.
I always want everyone to sound good.
Yeah, I was really glad that we got Monsignor Delendic's story recorded.
Yeah.
Because he was the first
Howard
chaplain.
Vinetsky too. We recorded Captain Vinetsky. He was at the Wallbounds fire, and he was very ill. We went to his house and recorded him with Sean Newman, and that was super powerful too. So... do you ever hear comments from people about this podcast? Do people ever give you feedback?
All the time. I get feedback all the time.
It's, you know, I think I remember Joe Malvasio telling me at one point it's been downloaded in every country around the world.
Yeah, we listened to internationally. And at first, when there weren't very many podcasts, he said that we were like number three in our category,
and
which
what
is
category?
Amazing.
It's the
government category.
Yeah, but we're also up against the Navy. In the Army, right?
Right now, yeah, exactly. You know, he likes to say we had a podcast before the New York Times, the Daily. So, but now we consistently rank in the top 200, which is pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
Well, everybody's got a podcast now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
We got this. I think we covered everything, right?
Yeah. Anyone want to say anything else?
Yeah, actually, Kristen, do you have anything you would like to add?
Why are you doing this to me? You know I could just cut it out.
I know you can. Exactly. It's just fun to get you because you do it to us.
Exactly.
No, but I will say it's a joy to work with you guys. And I'm sad that Liz isn't here anymore.
Thank you.
Yeah, we make the best of it.
Thanks for coming in, Liz.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming out of retirement, Liz, and hearing all about it as well.
Well, thank you. I highly recommend.
You highly recommend?
You know, we spoke about the different episodes that were meaningful in some way, but there's one interview where there was a particular phrase that has stuck with me and really resonated with me at the time. It was paramedic Kimberly Lachak, or Marshall, her maiden name. She was speaking about the job, and this really is universal for whether fire or EMS. I'm paraphrasing, but she said, you will never leave the same person you were when you came in. And that really resonated with me because it's true. All the trauma that we see, all of the human extreme circumstances that we see change who you are. For the better, if you allow it, but change who you are. So that was very meaningful response to a question.
You learn as a host as well, right? That's part of it.
That's right. Without a doubt.
So listen, Liz, thank you for coming in. We appreciate you taking time from your retirement to come join us one more time on the podcast, marking our 100th episode. The FDNY Pro Podcast, now in its 9th season, unbelievably. We thank you for listening. We appreciate you and hope you learned something. For more training and information from our subject matter experts, go to fdnypro.org.
FDNY Pro is online at fdnypro.org. Subscribe today and get inside access to the FDNY. Learn more about our publications, professional conferences, and other tools for first responders. Train with New York's bravest.